Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 17. Boom. Cap, that one was definitely closer, Flavius shouted over his shoulder. The crew had occupied the inside of the roof of the large warehouse on the outskirts of a town that, for operational reasons, was named Harrisburg. Leo was trying to repower the stolen Alerian comm panel with his blaster power pack, working on the power port that had been damaged sometime while running the previous night. Boom. The building shook again. Definitely closer, Cap, Flavius stated. Closer, yeah. They were closing in, and unless Leo got the comm panel fixed, it was going to be over soon. It had not been a good day. It all began 2 nights ago, when they had gotten this particular mission. A droid had been lost on the planet. Not just any droid, but one from the fleet's flagship. Intel had reported that the droid had been picked up by the opposition, and was awaiting shipment off-planet for intensive probing. The crew of the Arrogant Lion had been picked to go down and get it back. Leo and crew had parachuted in, and ended up on the outskirts of town. Moon and Holiday were staying with the ship on the far side of the planet's moon. That was the only support they had. Right now, they could not contact them due to their comm links being jammed. Blaster shots were heard coming from the roof. That meant the security forces were within 100 meters. Yoshi and Packer had set up the rest of the crew on the perimeter of the roof, and they were now under direct fire, as opposed to the artillery rounds that had been fired in an indiscriminate harassing pattern in this abandoned area of town. But now Leo knew that once this building had singled out, the artillery fire would begin raining down on them. There, the casing was off, and the wires were exposed. Now to get the wires stripped from the charging cable, and boom, 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 boom. The building shook, and then took on an unhealthy lean. Leo could now see holes in the wall. The Alerian gunners had targeted the outside corners of the warehouse. Any second, the building might collapse. Time to move up on the roof. Leo motioned to Flavius, Gonzalez, and Abe to go. Flavius gathered up the chest cavity of the robot and hightailed it up the catwalk to the roof. Leo was right on his tail. After he gathered up the tools, Gonzalez and Abraham pulled the pins on their booby traps they had been rigging on the doors and followed. Once on the roof, Leo moved to the center where Yoshi had set up an impromptu command post. Blaster fire zipped over the roof, and Leo threw himself on the roof near Yoshi. Leo pulled out his tools while Yoshi took the chest cavity Flavius and then directed the crew members to positions along the low wall surrounding the perimeter. Situation report, Yoshi. Well, we are almost surrounded. Got fire coming from all four sides. We got about 90 ECUs left, 30 grenades, and 2 rockets. And we got about a canteen of water left. We got 3 more minor blast wounds. Pablo and Fikowski are okay for now, but they need serious medical attention soon. But everyone else is still able to hold a weapon. Leo surveyed the situation and went back to work, knowing that if he did not get the comm gear working, then the situation would be a lot worse. Things had gone fine during the initial infiltration of the town. They had gathered information and then struck. The robot was being held in a local security forces headquarters, sort of like a local police station. Getting into the station had been one thing. They had broken in through the back door by stealth, broke into the cell where the robot had been deactivated. Well, the robot had sucked power from 3 power packs before Chief Engineer Fia called it lost cause and had tried to carry the thing out. That didn't work, so as their precious time ran out, Fia disassembled it. A snatch team had just cleared the building when bad luck had hit them full in the face. A patrol vehicle had come up and caught them exiting out of the back door. That had led into a running gun battle throughout the streets. They had overrun an ambush and a roadblock, but they had made some wrong turns in the town and could not break out into the countryside, and then every comm circuit was jammed before they could call for a pickup. During the run, they had heard over the stolen Alerian comm unit before it had been shot that a force of Alerian regular army troopers, who just happened to be in the area, were now hunting for them as well. Leo finally managed to get the power pack hooked up to the comm panel. Tiger to Lion, Tiger to Lion, come in, Lion. The voice of Lieutenant Moon came back, loud and clear. Arrogant Lion here, Tiger. Leo didn't waste any time. Things were bad, and this was the first good thing that had happened all day. Get us out of here, Leo shouted into the comm link. Moon, as quickly as always, picked up on the situation. You want that right away, or do you want to set up a rendezvous time, Cap? If Leo could have reached out and touched the guy, he would have slapped him silly. Now. Get here now. We got bad guys surrounding us, and the building we're on top of is about to collapse. Okay, we are moving now, sir, Moon said, finally catching on. Good, sending out coordinates, Leo said, punching the appropriate button. How long till you get here? Give Larry a minute, Cap, said Moon, sounding hurried. The voice of Larry came over the comlink next. About 15 minutes, sir. Okay, but be ready to do some shooting as you come in. The natives are very restless, and watch out for your six. Don't know where that planetary fighter wing is. You got it, Cap. Hold on, we are coming to get you.
Four.
The explosions rocked the building, landing all around the perimeter once more. The building shook, but held, although it shifted towards the left. Leo, Chief Fia shouted. Better come over here and see this. Leo crawled over to the corner where Fia had been posted. Leo maneuvered around the big man's weapon, a heavy-duty rocket launcher on a folding bipod that he had liberated from the Illyrians sometime during the night. Leo peeked over the ledge in the direction Fia had motioned. Uh-oh, Leo said, as he sank back behind the wall. Leo motioned Yoshi, who had traveled to the corner just to the left. Yoshi scurried over and peered where Leo had motioned. Bad. Very bad. That is an Illyrian light tank. Top of the line. Just came out last year, Yoshi shouted back. Fia, how many of those rockets you got left? And do you think you can do more than scratch the paint on that thing? Two. And maybe. And if I hit in a soft spot. But I don't know. That thing looks tough. Okay, well then. Keep peeking and try and figure out a soft spot. If that thing opens up, then this building and us on it are through. Leo looked around. The building shook slightly, and Leo saw a cloud of smoke rising up from the stairwell they had just run up. That would be the booby traps, which meant someone had tried to come in. Leo knew that they would effectively seal up the doorways. At least no one would try coming up from underneath without breaking through a wall. But that tank, sitting on the street, could knock down a wall with relative ease. The Illyrians apparently wanted to take them alive, and probably get the robot back too. Blaster fire shot up over the edge. Some of the crews popped up and fired back. Leo heard one or two screams of pain coming from below, signifying that someone had found a target. Leo checked a chronometer to see how long before Moon was due to arrive. 13 minutes, a long time. Leo duck-walked around and assessed the situation down on the street. The encirclement around the building was complete. The rooftops on the other building were now occupied, and luckily, all the buildings in the immediate area were of the same height. Blaster fire continued, and Leo and the rest of the crew kept their heads down. Leo motioned for every other man to come to this corner of the building. Then he assigned them positions supporting Fia's position. Leo tapped Fia on the shoulder, and Fia held up a hand asking for a minute. Leo watched the big man hitting the playback buttons on the computerized gun sight on the rocket launcher. After a few minutes, the big man gave him a thumbs up. Leo motioned the rest of the crew and gave them a three count with his hand and made sure they all acknowledged it. Three fingers, two fingers, one. Leo and the rest of the crew popped up over the edge and fired at whatever was sticking out. Leo heard the rocket launcher fire, and then he heard it fire again. Down, Leo shouted at the top of his lungs. Leo hit the ground, and someone fell on top of him. Packer. He was lying on his back with a big nasty burn mark in the center of his chest. Leo turned around and grabbed his head and kept it off the rough surface of the roof. Finucci, get over here. The thin, former Roman citizen was on the opposite end of the building, and Leo saw the tall, skinny ranger get up and sprint across the rooftop. There were blaster bolts landing around him, but somehow he made it across the rooftop without being hit. Sliding up the Packer's side and laying his medic bag out, he started to look over his wounds. Luckily, Packer had body armor on. That did not stop the blast from burning his arms and face, and he was moaning loudly. Finucci shot Packer up with some clear fluid. Packer's pained face relaxed immediately, and his eyes closed. Resting, Cap, but that is the best I can do for him. We gotta get him to an auto dock soon, though. That blast was powerful. It might cause him to go into shock. Leo looked at his readout on the comm panel. 9 minutes till retrieval. Crawling over the corner where Fia and Yoshi were, leaving Packer in the medic's care. When he looked around at them both, they had worried looks on their face. What now, guys? They looked at each other and shook their heads. Fia went first. Well, we knocked out that one tank, but it took both rockets to do it. And now we got at least five more moving down the streets around us, Yoshi finished. Leo leaned back and shook his head, wiped his brow with a bandana around his neck. Okay, well, we got, and he looked at his watch again, 8 minutes till help arrives. Get me some info on how much ammo we got left, and for God's sake, keep your heads down, he yelled as the two went scurrying off around the edge. The guys in the corner nearest to him, Gonzalez and Flavius, looked at him with a bit of fear in their eyes. It's going to be all right, guys. Larry, Holiday, Winchester, and Moon are coming for us, and then we are going to blow this entire place up, Leo said, smiling, hoping to make the guys look forward to some mass destruction. They smiled briefly and turned back to their sectors over the wall, sneaking peeks at the Illyrians down on the street. Leo heard them before he saw them. He scanned the horizon, trying to figure out where it was coming from, when he caught sight of them. Coming down the street, at about 100 meters above the deck, were two sharks strafing as they came towards them, pulling up about 100 yards away and flying directly over them. Leo followed them as they passed overhead, both ships duplicating the other's movements. The ships went straight up, did a roll, and came almost straight back down. Leo saw two items detached from the underside of the ship. He realized a half a second afterwards what they were. Torpedoes. They cut away from the arc of the ship and were making them come back down, and they were coming right towards the other side of the building. Incoming! Leo heard Logan yell. This is the first time he had heard the pilot yell, Leo thought, as he hit the deck. Twin blasts rocked the opposite side of the building, and Leo could see half the building start to shimmy. Move to this side, now, Leo said, trying to gather everyone's attention. Leo felt something impact his lower back, and then he wound up on his face. Pain, lots of pain. Leo rolled over and stared straight at the sky, trying to curl up in a ball. Leo felt hands dragging on him back towards the corner of the roof. Leo looked up and saw his Flavius dragging him by his combat vest. The rest of the crew were gathered around the corner. Leo lay down on the roof and looked around. Most of the roof had collapsed after the torpedoes hit. Anyone get the identity of those sharks? I did, Leo. It was ours, Logan said, from about 20 feet away. Huh. Leo was confused now and looked at his watch. 5 minutes ago. What the hell was going on? Activating the repaired comlink, he started shouting, Moon, where are you? And who is flying those sharks? Moon's voice echoed in his ear. That is Holiday. He had the sharks out patrolling, with the one slave to the other. Leo shouted into the comlink, Holiday, watch what the hell you are doing. You almost killed us on that last pass. Leo could not hear the engines of the ships, but he could hear the explosions in the distance. What? No thank you, Leo? You are an ungrateful jerk, Holiday said with a bit of anger. Ranger, you almost killed the entire crew with those torpedoes. I will talk to you later. And Moon, how far out are you? 3 minutes, sir. Okay, you got a fix on our position? Sure do. Got the scanners on maximum. I will be coming towards you from the north. Okay, looking for you. Warm up the auto dock and all the weapons. Got that, Larry? I want about 75% power on the lower rear shields and the rest to the upper shields. Roger, Leo, Larry echoed in his ear. Give me a warning beep when you get 30 seconds out. We'll be lined up and ready to board, Leo said, relieved. Leo looked around and checked on his guys. They had all assumed new positions around the wounded members, Pablo, Packer, and Fundikowski. Attending them was Fanucci. They would go on first, helped by the walking wounded, Gonzalez and Moon. The blaster fire had slowed, and Leo snuck a peek over the heads of his crew. The street was smoking from the laser fire poured into it by twin sharks. The rest of the buildings appeared to be either empty, or the Illyrians on top of them were hiding. Leo looked back over the warehouse they were occupying. What had once been a level roof was now partially standing, and where the crew had dispersed over most of it, they were now restricted to one corner. The guys were sitting about double arm's length apart now. Okay, guys, the ship is going to be here in 2 minutes. When I get a beep signifying 30 seconds out, I want you to prime your grenades, all of them. And when I give the signal, I want you to heave them to cover the withdrawal. Right after you heave the grenades, go into a mad minute with your weapons. We don't get paid to bring ammo home. We get paid to shoot. And by then, the ship will be here, Leo shouted. Then, when you guys double time up the ramp, Fia, Yoshi, and me will provide covering fire. He got head nods from everybody except Packer, who was still being held by Flavius. Beep, the comm panel went off. Leo looked over the horizon, saw a fast approaching dot from the north, and knew the lion was coming. Now, the guy stood up and heaved all the grenades over the low wall. They all ducked, and the building was rocked once more. The echoes had not even stopped, and Leo heard all the blasters going off at once. Then suddenly, the sun was blocked out. Leo could feel the heat coming off the ship. The ship was over top of them, and Leo didn't even look back before he knew the front ramp was down and the crew was moving. Leo popped up first, and was joined on either side by Fia and Yoshi. Leo let go with everything he had. He lost thought of the two guys on either side. He got lost in the process of acquire, target, shoot, recover, acquire, target, shoot. The next thing he knew, someone was grabbing him by the combat vest and gave him a tug. He turned and saw Fia's hand on his shoulder and Yoshi running up the ramp. Leo nodded, and they all three ran up the ramp together. Once inside, Yoshi hit the retract button, and Leo punched a comm panel. Move us out of here, Moon. Now, a half a second later, Leo felt the ship start to move. Larry, give me the public address. Okay, everyone's on board. Everyone man a gun turret. Fanucci, take care of the guys, Leo said as he climbed the ladder behind Yoshi and Fia. Fia jumped off on deck 2, running towards the rear, towards Fanucci's gun turret. Yoshi and Leo made it to the command deck and ran towards the cockpit. Endex, Endex, again, Endex. This is Tunnel Command, the voice boomed through the ship. Bring your ship to an orbit of 6.3 on latitudinal line 93. Endex, Endex. Leo slumped down onto the padded floor. Endex, short for end of exercise. The training mission was over. He breathed heavily and sat with his back up to a wall. Yoshi slumped down on the stoop of the cockpit and let his weapons sink to the floor. Captain Grant, stand down. Prepare for an after-action review with the training commander, 2000 hours. Roger, Anything further? Nothing at this time. Leo sighed and stood up and started the stand-down procedure. Moon, bring us into that orbit. Larry set a running level 3 diagnostic on all systems. Two echoes of "Aye, sir," rang out, and Leo just nodded as he dropped his gear to the floor. He put his weapon on the power down mode and holstered it. Finucci, how are your patients? Leo asked as he made his way towards the sick bay. Leo unstrapped his body armor and let some cool air in. Unfortunately, some of the past 3 days' body odor got out. Good, Captain. Packer is resting in the recovery bed. Fundikowski is already out at the door, even though I want him to rest a few minutes, and Pablo is under the auto dock now. I want you to report, sir. You took a nasty shot to the back just a little while ago. Huh. I got shot. Leo pulled off the body armor and turned it around. Sure enough, there was a large burn mark on the lower back. Now that he saw it, he had realized his back was numb in that area. So that is what had thrown him to the ground. Yeah, when things calm down, I will be right there. Run a med check on everyone. Anyone needs anything, get them fixed up. Roger, sir. Finucci signed off. Leo thought ahead to what else needed to be done. A light went off in his head, and then he got depressed, thinking what he'd need to do. Larry, where is Holiday and the Sharks? Coming up on the rendezvous point. Once we achieve assigned orbit, in approximately 5 minutes, and 5 minutes after that, he'll be within link-up range. Thanks, Larry. Continue with the diagnostic. Roger, Leo. Winchester, where are you? In the engineering section, Captain. Okay, meet me in the docking bay. I have some questions about some points of law. Understood, Captain. Leo signed off and made his way towards the flight bay, physically exhausted, but felt as though he's going to be very, very tired soon for another reason entirely. A few minutes later, Leo ended up in the flight bay, Packer's Bay, where Holiday would be landing. Winchester was standing near the mechanics bench. Leo leaned against the bench and stared at the wall. Winchester turned to face him with an unblinking gaze. After a short conversation, Leo had all the information he needed for what had previously thought were the rules that applied to this situation. Leo dispatched Winchester for the items he needed. Then he sat down, feeling tired, and wondering if he was about to do the right thing. Larry chimed in and announced Holiday was in docking position. Leo informed him to keep him in a holding position for a few minutes. Leo called the crew to the upper flight deck and informed them of the reason for the meeting. As he met in a corridor, Leo was silent as the crew gathered around him and stared down at their feet and fiddled with their gear that most of them were still wearing. Moon was still on duty in the cockpit, but would join them at the last moment. Holiday called for a landing clearance after a few minutes, and Leo gave the approval himself. When the bay cycled through and the air pressure was equal with the rest of the ship, Leo motioned. The crew lined up along the wall, still fidgeting slightly. Holiday was climbing down for the Shark. Hey guys, here to thank me for saving your butts from the fire down there? Leo looked Holiday over and shook his head. What, Cap? What's wrong? You're still not mad about that crack I made down below, he said, motioning towards the planet. Hey, sorry. Leo shook his head and motioned towards Moon, who moved forward next to Leo. Ranger Holiday, your recent actions have placed a majority of the crew in extreme danger by firing weapons danger close to a known location for your crew, with a blatant disregard for their safety, with no thought for the consequences of your action. Do you have anything to say in your defense? Moon read off the comm panel. Cap, I was just doing my job. I was trying to help. I didn't do anything wrong. Do you admit to firing 2 torpedoes on the surface of the planet at a target that was only 50 meters from the roof of a warehouse where you knew your fellow crew members to be? Leo asked sullenly. Yes, sir, Holiday stammered. And did you also know the danger close area for that weapons to personnel on the ground was 100 meters? Leo asked, with a knot in his stomach. Yes, sir, Holiday replied, looking down at the ground. In that case, you knew the danger of the weapons you fired and the proximity of friendly troops. Then I submit to you and the crew gathered here that you did put the crew in an unnecessarily dangerous situation during a training mission. What do you have to say for yourself, Ranger Holiday? Still looking down at the ground, he stated softly. I'm sorry, sir. Leo stepped close to him, put his hand on his shoulder, and whispered to him, Me too, but I have to do this. Standing up straight and addressing the crew, this type of behavior needs to be punished so that none of us forget. It is with the discretion of this command that 10 lashes be administered for punishment. Winchester stepped forward, and Holiday did not realize what was happening at first, as Leo reached into the case that was held open. Leo grabbed the handcuffs into the case and held them out for Holiday, who put his hands in front of him, and Leo clamped the cuffs around his wrists. Leo stepped back, and Holiday dropped his head to his chest. Leo led Holiday over to the wall and put his hands above his head on a hook used to secure cables. Leo was about to stop at this point, let Holiday down, and end it all. but he continued and sucked it up. The rest of the crew was standing there, dumbfounded. They were not even shifting from foot to foot as they had earlier. Leo took the knife from his belt sheath and cut off Holiday's shirt. Leo felt like the lowest thing on earth. There was nothing more to do but continue. Ten now was to give up, along with the rest of the care he felt for these guys, was also the fact that he was in command. He could not give up now. He had to keep reminding himself about the torpedoes that had almost taken out the rest of the crew, as well as himself. Holiday was shaking with nervous tension as he stood there waiting for the lashes to begin. Leo looked over to Yoshi, who took his position beside him. Leo had assigned everyone their duties in a briefing about a month ago. Yoshi, the former mathematician, would count out the lashes. Flavius would attend to the wounds and run a continuous med scan, so no permanent damage would be done. Leo motioned for Winchester, who brought the case. Leo retrieved the last item in the case, the whip. Leo did not want to look at it. It even felt like a snake in his hands, but he drew it out, and Leo walked to a point 10 paces from the victim. In between each lash, Leo waited until he got a nod from Flavius that Holiday was all right. When Leo got finished with the 5th lash, he stopped. Holiday was stifling his whimpers, and Leo could not stand it anymore. There were tears in his own eyes, which he wiped with no shame. Then he made a decision. His judgment had been declared, and there were still 5 more lashes to go. But Leo had enough, and Holiday had had enough. Leo leaned over to Yoshi and whispered his instructions to him. Yoshi walked over to the figure of Holiday and got him down from the hook. Finucci helped Yoshi when Holiday almost collapsed to the floor. They helped them to one side of the stools. Yoshi undid the handcuffs and walked back over to the hook. Leo joined him. Leo looked around and faced the crew and spoke while wiping the tears from his eye. For every action, there was a reaction. For every debt, there must be payment. And for every wrongdoing, punishment. Leo paused, trying to get the words out. The prescribed punishment is 10 lashes for this particular amount of gross disregard for our safety. But, he paused, searching for the right words. Enforcing these rules causes pain. So to let you know that whatever one of you does affects all of us, not just one, but all, Leo dropped his head and said to the rest, in a voice loud enough for everyone to hear, it especially affects me, because for some strange reason, I was picked to lead you guys, so lead I will. Leo turned to Yoshi with some motioning, clamped the cuffs around his wrists, but Leo himself put his hands up on the hooks. Yoshi then drew his own knife and cut off Leo's shirt. Leo heard the footsteps walk away and waited for the first blow to fall. When it did, it caught him by total surprise. The pain was intense, and Leo jerked with the pain and twisted slightly, the cuffs catching him so he could not fall to his knees. The rest of the blows came, but he was ready for them. Almost. Then hands were lifting him off the hook, and when he turned, it was Yoshi. Then Finucci was running his tissue regenerator over his back. The pain subsided, but the memory was still there. Leo reached down and grabbed the remains of his t-shirt from the floor and draped it around his neck. No one had said anything the entire time. Leo turned towards the men and walked closer to them so he could not have talks aloud. It's over, guys. It is finished. I don't want to hear any more about it. Now then, you guys get back to work, clean the gear, and get it ready for the next mission, whenever that might be. The guys just stood there, fidgeted a bit, some shifting from one foot to the other, others playing with the gear they still had on. Get out of here, Leo yelled, then turned away. The crew filed out, and Leo leaned against the shark, watching them go. Yoshi, Finucci, Holiday remained silent, standing behind him, while Winchester started to clean up their items. Leo watched him with detached interest, shaking his head at the whole situation. Sir, it was Holiday. I just wanted to say, Leo held up his hands. Like I said, it is over. No words need to be said. I need nothing else from you, except for you to learn. Now go and get cleaned up, then come back here and make sure the sharks are ready for the next mission. Leo motioned for him to go. Holiday stepped back, came to the position of attention, and fired off a salute. Leo returned it, and Holiday did an about-face and ran from the bay. Leo stood and started to walk in the same direction. Yoshi fell in beside him, seemed as though he wanted to say something, but stopped. Finucci followed him out of the bay. When he got to the tubes to go to the crew section, Finucci coughed. Yes, Leo said, stopping but not turning. Sir, I want you to come to sick bay with me. Leo nodded and turned to Yoshi. Get ready for our next mission, first mate. Yoshi nodded. Leo then turned and followed the medic down to sick bay. Chapter 18. The next morning, Leo woke up feeling terrible. Mentally, that is. Physically, he felt fine. The auto doc saw to that every time. Leo just laid there and let his mind wander, turning over the facts of the last mission. The punishment dealt out last night, and then the after-action review. The worst part of the last couple days, hands down, was the punishment he had to deal out to Holiday. But then, the after-action review had been a close second. Leo hated doing it, but Holiday had been warned numerous times when he was piloting sharks that he was too careless, too reckless. Once he had even buzzed the lion too close and too fast, barely missing the top ball turret. This stunt had earned him 3 days of bread and water rations, but obviously he had not learned. Leo regretted it, but he would not change it, even if he could. It had been the right thing to do. Leo sighed and rolled over and looked around his room. His clothes from last night were lying on the floor where he had dropped them. His gear, well, that was... where was it? Leo looked around for the gear, which had also been disregarded randomly throughout the room as well. The gear was not in the room. Neither was Yoshi. He had heard him get up about an hour ago. Maybe he had taken it. Leo was glad for Yoshi. He did not talk too much, only gave advice when asked, and always had the correct answer for whatever he needed. Sure, he was a little short with the men, sometimes, and demanding, but a good guy overall. And the guys had started to warm to him slowly. Maybe he was cleaning the gear, or having Winchester do it. Leo could have thrown the gear into the replicator and had it reduced to energy, then reassembled, clean, and fully operational. But the drain on the ship's energy would be unnecessary, and as Leo knew, irreplaceable. Sure, right now the ship had energy to spare, but Leo did not want to set a bad precedent, and Leo had told Larry the gear would be cleaned manually, so now the cleaning materials were replicated and the gear cleaned by hand. Leo did not care about his gear at this point, though. He felt he did not really care too much about anything right now. In fact, after the after-action review last night, he wasn't sure if he was qualified to be a captain. The reviewers had ripped him apart on every facet of the mission. First, he was told he took too many men on the mission. He should have left a larger support crew on the ship for emergencies, like the one they had run into. Then the review had dumped on the issue that he had run from the fight and had holed up in the warehouse instead of making for the countryside. They had even gotten as nitpicky down to the fact that Leo himself had worked on the comlink power connection instead of turning it over to one of his technicians he had on the ground with him. It was all very painful. They had everything recorded. That was the whole purpose of Tunnel and the other planets they had been trained on. A total control of the environment, testing of the crews and commanders, then critiquing them. It had been the same for all the planets, Glacier, Jungle, and Baron. The missions had come in fast and furious, one after another. Overall, Leo and the crew were rated successful, marginally successful. There had been the missions where Leo had lost half his men and the entire ship. There was a time Leo asked too much of Larry and the computer had a simulated meltdown. And if it had not been for some quick calculations by Yoshida, the whole ship would have had a simulated crash into the stars. Then there was a mission where Leo had been killed immediately, and the crew did an outstanding job and was rated the highest for any recon crew on that mission. Then there was a mission the crew had been killed before they even started, thanks to Leo choosing the wrong infiltration route. Leo did get some compliments on the actual mission. The kill rate on the Alarian robots was the highest of the greatest they'd ever seen for this scenario. They had complimented Fia on his innovative idea of taking the robot apart so they could get the information back. Most teams, when they had discovered they couldn't take the cumbersome thing with them, had just destroyed it in place. At the end of the meeting, the heavy cruiser commander, and also the training commander for the Tunnel Planet, known to Leo and his crew as Tunnel Town, gave them a 48-hour stand-down period. No missions coming in, no ready to go at a moment's notice, no alerts, just relax, fix equipment, and sleep. Leo had passed a message on to the enlisted men as soon as he got it. Then the other officers were dismissed, and Leo was roasted over the coals by the graders in private. They had even requested information on the punishment for Holiday for his actions, as his danger-close maneuver had been noted. Leo had told him that the punishment was recorded in the internal logs of the lion, accessible upon request. Now Leo was taking advantage of the downtime. He just wanted to hide in his cabin, sleep, eat, and read a bit. Mostly, though, just hide. He felt as though the whole mess was slipping away from him, the crew, the missions, everything. Who was he to be leading a bunch of guys back towards Earth through a universe full of aliens who wanted to kill him? Leo had been going through the information about the renegades, the guys, and the few girls who had left the fleet. A majority of them had been from the 20th century, like Leo himself. Most of them were either pilots or technicians, one Marine, but no one in command position. 213 in all. From all reports, most of them had already left the training sector. Most had left in the middle of the night with no farewell to anyone. A few had turned in resignations and taken messages back to Earth for the Admiral. There were even a few that had decided to settle in the sanctuary system, most of them being former farmers. Leo knew all this because the Admiral made it his policy to post all the names of the settlers, homebounders, and renegades. The Admiral's intention was that everyone would know what was going on and who might be out there. The settlers, in case members of the fleet needed somewhere to hide out if things went sour, the homebounders to help along the way if necessary, because they were carrying messages home that would equip Earth with the technology and intelligence about the impending invasion, along with the outline of the Admiral's plan to slow down the Horde's expansion, and the names of the renegades who had taken off with no explanation or warning. The Admiral wanted to know what their thought process was, whether they were out to get home or possibly sell information to the Alarians, or just protect their own lives. All this information was posted on the announcements sent out by the Admiral every week. Leo had wondered what he would do if he left the fleet, head for Earth, and see what had happened to it in the last 200 years he had been gone, settle here, and keep Sanctuary ready for possible future colonization by Earth, or just wander the galaxy and see what was out there. Leo got up and punched up the replicator and got a bowl of oatmeal. He sat at the desk and ate, punching the movie menu on the screen. Leo wanted some laughs, so he pulled up Stripes with Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, and John Candy. Leo laid back in bed, watched the movie. About halfway through, he had a revelation when Bill Murray went into his tirade with the losers in his platoon. It all became clear to him from that scene. This whole fleet, him, his crew, all of them were losers. The Outfitters, in their ultimate wisdom, had picked a bunch of failures. Out of a couple thousand years of history on Earth, the people who did not add anything of significance, they had been plucked out of time and space and thrown in together here, halfway across the galaxy. Losers, all of them. Leo turned off the movie and got really depressed. What chance did they have? A bunch of losers. A bunch of people who could not even make a dent in the history books or add a child to the human race that would mean anything. That's how big a bunch of losers they were. The couple thousand or so people represented a zero sum for the history of the world. Oh boy. While all this was going through his head, he heard a knock on the door, and Yoshida stuck his head in. "Hey, Leo, we got a situation out here that I need you for." Leo just laid there. "Can't you handle it, Yoshi?" Leo said, sort of pleading, and rolling over so he faced the wall on his bunk. "No, this is something I think only you can handle," the first mate responded. "Okay, what is it?" Leo had gotten bad vibes when he came back on board last night through the coupling from the heavy cruiser. There had been no space for the line on board, so they linked up via a docking ring and crossed over that way. Leo came back somewhat depressed. Once aboard, he climbed down to the crew level. When he stepped on the deck, the loud voices he had heard before abruptly stopped. He looked around, and most of the crew was sitting around the lounge area. No one spoke, and no one said hello. They all just stopped and stared at him. Leo just nodded and went into his room, feeling excluded and alone, divorced from it all. Leo did not know what the crew had been discussing last night, but he felt he was about to get some bad news. Yoshi just stood at the door watching Leo get dressed. "Well, what is it, Yoshi?" Leo said, getting his gun belt on now. "I think they had better tell you themselves," Yoshi said with a blank look on his face. "Huh. Okay." Leo's mind was racing, trying to figure out what was going on. They, meaning more than one, perhaps the entire crew, were they going to protest Holiday's treatment? Was there going to be a mass exodus from the fleet due to the harshness of the training? Or maybe they wanted Leo to resign. Leo finished dressing and went to the replicator, got a glass of OJ, and swallowed it down. Then he followed Yoshi out the door. The crew was gathered at the far end of the living area, standing with their backs to him. From in front, Yoshi yelled, "Crew, attention!" They snapped to, still turned away from Leo. He stopped and waited to see what was up. "About face?" The crew turned around, looking grim. A person detached themselves from the formation. It was Moon, co-pilot, chief gunner, former Korean taxi driver, who approached Leo and stopped three paces in front of him. Pulling out a scroll from his belt, he started to read. "To Captain Leo David Grant, Captain, Junior Grade, Commanding Officer of the Arrogant Lion, Recon Ship 12 of the 2nd Squadron, from the United and Unanimous Crew of the Arrogant Lion. They have a motion they would like to present to the captain for his approval. Leo nodded for him to continue, fearing the worst. Submitted for your endorsement, after a great deal of research, debate, argument, and a few blows. Moon stopped for a half a second, looked over his right shoulder towards Chief Fia. And after reaching a consensus on the issue, the crew has decided to put it before you for a final decision. Leo assures a petition for a mass desertion, or something similar. An item to be submitted for your approval. And the other shoe was about to drop. The crew has noticed it has become a trend among the fleet to wear distinctive headgear for their ship or their crew, and we have picked a cover we felt is appropriate for us to sport. Huh? Came Leo's response, unsure what was going on. From behind his back, Moon pulled out a kepe, black in color. Leo had seen them before in movies, and had always thought they looked cool. Maybe not the most functional, but comfortable. The crew had done some modifications to it. The kepis Leo had seen were the ones from the American Civil War, worn mostly by the Northern Army, but occasionally by the Southern units as well, with the slouching top covering part of the brim, and an insignia on the front, or perhaps on the top. The kepi handed to Leo was neither blue nor gray, but made up of black felt. The band was made up of what looked like a braided gold cord. On top of the hat was a gold insignia, a bayonet crossing a lightning bolt, with the face of a stately lion superimposed over both of them. It was noble to view, and felt good in his hands. The crew was looking at him with intense interest. Leo smiled, bowed his head slightly, and put the hat on his head. A cheer went up from the crew, who pulled out identical hats and placed them on their heads. Maybe things were not as bad as Leo had originally thought. Chapter 19. 21 January, 2151. The Psi went flying across the bay. Leo followed it somewhat, landing on his buttocks. Picking himself up, he charged back at the technician with a flying sidekick. Catching him in the midsection, Fanucci went flying back into the wall. Leo pulled his spare Psi out and made a swinging blow to the temple. "Pretty good, Captain," Fanucci said, eyeing the Psi an inch from his skull. "Yeah, but you caught me off guard with the double roundhouse kick," Leo said, lowering the Psi and wiping the sweat from his brow. "Well, hey, when you knocked the nunchucks from my hand, I had to do something." Leo nodded, put the Psi back into his belt. Grabbing a towel from the nearby table, Leo wiped his neck and face. Fanucci just wiped his brow with his sleeve and grabbed a water bottle and chugged some down. Leo threw on his heavy sweatshirt and draped the towel across his neck. He walked towards the replicator and asked for a bottle of water as well. Sitting down across from the table from Fanucci, Leo put his feet up on the rest of the bench and leaned back against the bulkhead. They sat that way for 10 minutes, not talking. "How much longer till the fleet catches up with us this time, Cap?" Fanucci asked. "Don't you listen to any of my briefings, Ranger?" Leo answered the question with a question. "I do, but I was off duty and asleep during the last one," Fanucci responded defensively. "Oh, and you could not ask Larry to repeat the briefing?" Leo asked, having fun with the technician. "Well, I could, but I keep forgetting, so would you just answer the question already?" Fanucci said, exasperated. Sure. What was the question again?" Leo said, with his eyes closed but grinning. The response was not what Leo expected, as a stream of cold water hit him in the face. Leo was up in a flash, but Fanucci was quicker, jumping over the table and diving for one of the down-sloping access tubes that led to the back of the ship. Leo was about to grab the little ranger by the ankle and squirt him with his own water bottle when the message lights on the deck and the walls started flashing red. Leo quickly turned around and made his way towards the cockpit. When he got there, Packer was sitting down in the co-pilot's seat. "Report," Leo called out, sliding into his own seat and looked over his own monitors. "Well, about 50 seconds ago, we got a spike on the thermosensors at 350 degrees at a 45-degree raise, range 30,000 meters. Then 20 seconds ago, we got visual confirmation at approximately the same angle," Packer responded quickly. "Larry, do you have an identification of the ship yet?" Leo asked. While he was waiting for Larry to respond, he glanced around and found the rest of the bridge crew behind him. He motioned quickly for them to assume their positions while making hand motions for Moon to man the howitzer mounted directly above and behind the bridge. Captain, Larry responded, the ship has shut down its systems to minimal levels and is currently holding its position in orbit. Its scanners and its sensors are in full power, and continuous sweeps are being conducted. Identification is inconclusive at this point, except to say the ship is roughly the size of a multi-person ship, perhaps able to hold 20 personnel. Thanks, Larry, Leo said absently, as he checked his own screens, verifying what Larry had just told him. Okay, people, Leo said, activating his PA channel. Sound off by position from front to rear. Personnel in inactive positions last. Yoshida, pilot's chair. Packer, co-pilot's position. Gutenberg, communications. Moon, main cannon. Fanucci, top front ball turret. Holiday, top rear ball turret. Fia, engineering. Flavius, engineering. Fundakowski, bottom front ball turret. Faraday, bottom rear ball turret. Winchester, engineering. Mansfield, in ready position for shark mounting. Gonzalez, in ready position for shark mounting. Okay, people, we do this like we have done it every other time. We sit, we wait, and we watch, Leo said, whispering into his comlink, as if the unknown craft could hear him at this distance. I am dropping the ship to level 1. Until the bogey disappears, we go to 2 shifts. Leo heard some moans from some of the guys. They had been on 3 shifts, which meant plenty of sleep for everyone. But now going down to 2 shifts and going down to level 1 meant minimal heat, no hot food or hot water, and almost absolute darkness throughout the ship. The unknown is starting to scan the surface, Leo, Gutenberg stated calmly. Okay, everyone, freeze. Hold tight. No talking or unnecessary movement until I give the okay. The arrogant lion became completely still. Leo watched his screen as a pattern for the scan started to become apparent. It started from the dark line on the small moon surface, where one side was continually dark and the other side dimly lit from the small red star in the system. The search pattern moved up and down the dark side of the moon, drawing closer and closer to the lion. The scanner would hit this particular area in, Leo calculated, 30 minutes. Leo sat there watching the search draw closer and closer. Leo's thoughts went down to the guys in the engineering and the ready positions for mounting. It was dark down there, cold. Leo started to feel the cold himself. He knew that some manned portions of the ship dropped down to 20 degrees at this alert level 1. He hoped the guys were dressed warm. They had been operating at level 3 and 2 for a week now, so most everyone wore warm clothing anyways. Luckily, Leo could see an end in sight for the freeze order. If and when the scan was inconclusive and the ship did not even see them, the guys would be able to move around. Leo watched the scanning pattern develop further. 20 minutes to scan. Any excess energy or thermal variations with the surface of the moon would have been bled off into the vacuum that surrounded them by the time the scan would hit them, Leo hoped. Leo hoped the ship's passive sensors would be able to identify the ship by the scanner's energy patterns. It had worked before, if there was enough time while being scanned. It was a double-edged sword, though. The longer they were scanned, the better chance Larry and Gutenberg had of identifying the source, but also the longer the unknown ship had of getting a reading from something that was not quite the surface of the moon. 15 minutes. Leo heard a stifled yawn and knew it had come from his first mate on the darkened bridge, who had been asleep in his cabin before the unknown ship was spotted. 14 minutes. Leo hoped the spacecraft hanging overhead was from the fleet. If it was, then he knew the main body of the fleet was close by. If the fleet was nearby, that meant retrieval, and that would be soon as well. Then they would be back up to level 6 and get some hot showers, sleep in warm beds, and eat plenty of hot food. 12 minutes. Leo hoped it was not a horde ship. That would be bad. If they were spotted, Leo's orders were clear. Allow no information to get back to the Alarians. Secrecy must be maintained at all costs. Destroy any ship that finds you while in hiding. If a ship is not initially destroyed, follow it until it is. 11 minutes. Not that Leo had any real reservations about destroying an Alarian ship, but to ensure no information went back, all it would take would be a hastily dispatched message, and that would be all she wrote about maintaining complete fleet secrecy. 10 minutes. Heck, Leo thought, it would not be the first Alarian ship destroyed. There had been reports about privateers and Alarian scout ships inadvertently coming upon some of the squadrons. From all reports, though, there had been such a barrage of communications and electronic interference, scrambling and jamming energy transmitted that ships, they had been unable to function and had easily been destroyed by the ships that got to them first. 9 minutes. Maybe, though, it was one of the fleet ships. This was the third time since they had left the sanctuary system the line had gone out on extended reconnaissance, screening the fleet movement. And as always, the line had spotted the fleet first. Leo checked the screens. 8 minutes. The procedure was to go out on the course laid out for them, do some surveillance of a system, then plant themselves on a planet, asteroid, or moon, and wait, either until the first fleet ship was seen, or at a designated time, rejoin the fleet. Finding the fleet, which had been done on the other two missions, was sort of hit or miss. A general course was given to the line, and then the line searched for the fleet. The first time had been relatively easy, in fact, almost fatally easy. 7 minutes. When the line finally found the fleet, a squadron of fighters had almost shot the ship into atoms. When first contact sensor was established with the fleet, Leo ordered the ship up to alert level 7. A few minutes after that, a squadron of fighters zeroed in on them, trained all the weapons on them, and ordered them to drop shields. Well, Leo was down in his bunk at the time when the sirens went off. Leo stormed up to the cockpit area in just a pair of shorts. Before he got halfway up the ladder, Leo heard Logan, who happened to be on duty, screaming. He was using obscenities and all kinds of words, some of them in his native tongue, Gaelic, ordering the fighter squadron to take their targeting scanners off the line. 6 minutes. Leo had stood behind Logan waiting to see what would happen. Leo heard the leader of the fighter squadron responding back in Gaelic. The argument between Logan and the fighter squadron leader continued for a few more minutes, mostly in Gaelic. When there was a pause, and in the calmest voice he could, he asked for the squadron leader to check his scanners and cross-match that data known configurations of fleet design. Leo had provided the ship's identification codes and asked that the squadron leader to check that as well. Leo might have even said please a couple times. 5 minutes. Well, a few minutes later, the much calmer voice of the squadron leader came back over the comm channel and said, "Proceed, Arrogant Lion. You have been cleared for entrance into the fleet's perimeter." Logan started to reach for the button to reestablish contact with the fighters, and Leo looked at him. Knowing the man was going to say things that weren't very nice. Leo reached out with his own hand quickly, covered the button, shook his head. Logan looked back at him with murder in his eyes for a short second, and then he relaxed. 4 minutes. By this time, everyone else in the crew was in their positions, with the bridge crew standing behind them. Leo hit the PA mode on his comm link and ordered everyone to stand down, and told them it was a false alarm. Logan stomped away from the bridge, and Leo watched him activate the holographic alcove and proceed to try and beat the stuffing out of a very heavy punching bag. He did this for about 5 minutes, and after working up a good sweat, he came back to the bridge and resumed his position. "Can I go now?" Leo asked timidly. Logan just raised his hand and waved Leo away. Leo made his way back to the cabin, shaking his head as he went, mostly wondering what Logan had been saying in Gaelic. 3 minutes. The waiting was the hardest part. It was fatiguing sitting here with the screen, unchanging, except for the very slow, very deliberate, sweeping motion coming closer and closer to the ship. The Arrogant Lion had used the same type of procedures when scouting this moon, only they did not find anything waiting for them on the surface. Leo knew step by step the procedures they would use if they were found. First, Leo would hit the green light on his panel. This would also light green lights on everyone else's panels, but it would do a little bit more than that. It would power up every control system on the ship. 2 minutes. This would allow every man to do his assigned task. Yoshida would be able to power up all the propulsion systems and lift the ship off the surface in 15 seconds. Packer, who was sitting in Moon's co-pilot position, would be able to target the other ship with either torpedoes, missiles, or the main blasters. Gutenberg, who was in his permanent position, would blast the other ship with both electronic communications jamming, throwing up an interference cone supposed to block any transmissions if the ship was in range. Then Abe would try and conduct short tractor beam locks on the other ship and either push or pull the ship, throwing it off its internal stabilizers. Moon, who had ended up in Sergeant Gonzalez's position, would target the enemy ship with his main blaster, conducting backup scans to assist the co-pilot in determining any vulnerabilities. Finucci, Holiday, Verde, and Funikowski would shoot anything that presented themselves into their fields of fire. 1 minute. While Chief Tuatelli and Flavius would assist to ensure nothing blew out with the power surge by rerouting critical systems if necessary throughout the secondary circuits. Meanwhile, Mansfield and Gonzalez, who was taking care of Packer's job, would slide down chutes extending from the lateral airlocks down to the camouflaged sharks. Then, after going through their emergency launch procedures, they would lift off in about 35 seconds and assist the line in whatever way they could. 30 seconds. The scan was 200 meters away and moving towards the line, like a searchlight in a prison yard. 150 meters. 100 meters, 50 meters, 10 seconds, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Leo's panel lit up, along with several others on the bridge. Thousands of computations were made, deciphering the stream of energy that was touching the line at that very second. The energy was picked up by the sensors on the hull and translated into mathematical equations. Larry was going to translate those numbers into usable information. Then he would match the information against the library files. The scanning beam continued on its pattern. "Larry," Leo whispered, "what's the word, friend or foe?" "Only 95% certainty at this time, but it appears to be a friendly craft, Captain." Leo heard a hushed sigh of relief coming from the crew. "Okay, gang, you can move and talk if you need to, but we remain at level 1 until confirmation is 100% and communications is established," Leo said over the ship-wide comm circuit. Leo turned to Gutenberg and Packer, who were standing up and stretching. "Abe, Packer, start initial scans at the lower levels, spectral, radio, and so forth. Use your discretion. Start at energy level 1, and slowly, meticulously work your way up the scale." "You got it, Leo," Packer responded, putting in a bit of tobacco in between his cheek and gum, spilling a few particles on the floor in the process. Abe just nodded. Leo swiveled back to his screens. Information was starting to come across now on the unknown bogey. Leo checked that thought. Unknown ally. There it was, a gunship in geosynchronous orbit around the moon, just above the horizon, commonly known in the fleet as the Pig. Holding a crew of 6, its mission was primarily fast strikes into enemy territory, either solo or in groups. The ship was sometimes used for close air support of ground troops or short-range reconnaissance. Apparently the latter was true in this case, as evidenced by its extensive search pattern of this moon. Fortunately, unfortunately, depending on which side of the search you were on, they had not found the lion, but Leo had found them. Now, how to break the news to them that they'd be dead if the arrogant lion had been an Alarian ship? The options: open normal communications channels and tell them flat out. Open communications channels, but with the transmitter Gutenberg had placed on the far side of the moon, bringing the ship up a couple energy levels to see if they were noticed. Or come charging out of their hide site and scare the heck out of them. Considerations: if normal channels were opened, the arrogant lion might immediately find itself on the crosshairs of a targeting scanner. If the covert transmitter was used, then the other ship could not lock in on their ship immediately, at least not until Leo identified himself and showed them that they were hidden. Or bring the ship up a couple energy levels and see if the other ship noticed them. But that still risks the possibility of them targeting the lion. And the last one, well, it might start some bad vibes, not to mention some stray shots if the lion pounced just now. "Larry, do you got a more positive ID on that ship?" Leo asked. "Yes, sir. I do. It matches with 99% certainty Gunship 5 of Squadron 3. The only thing I've not yet confirmed is the electro-impulse emissions from the positronic brain, and that will not be possible until we establish communications." "Way ahead of you, Larry. Abe, activate your transmitter on the far side. Turn it up to full power and attempt to contact that other ship." Leo turned back to his screen and switched back to public address quickly. "Okay, crew, look sharp. We will stay alive. I'm going to bring the line back up to level 2, and every couple of minutes after that, notch more until we are back to level 4. But let us hope this ship hanging above us doesn't have a nervous gunner. Shields will be coming up slowly. Don't want to scare them." Leo turned the PA channel back off. "Got a communications link, boss," Abe declared. Leo toggled his comm link and then keyed up his visual communications screen. "Hi there, gunship. This is Captain Leo Grant. 12 of 15, long-range recon ship, Squadron 2. The Arrogant Lion, welcome to our neighborhood." Leo saw 3 things happen immediately on his screens. The communications scanner on the gunship went to full power, the shields were thrown up surrounding the ship, and all the targeting scanners went all the way up as well. No response other than that. "Bunch of nervous Nellies up there," Packer said, spinning into his ever-present handheld and spill-proof spittoon. Leo rolled his eyes as Yoshida and Gutenberg murmured in agreement. "Hi guys, nice to see you. Sorry you can't see us presently. Just did not want to scare you. Last broadcasting station, please identify yourself again," a female voice said with a slight trace of fear. Leo responded immediately as he noted the scan for the transmitter was zeroing in and did not want it shot up. "I say again, Gunship 5 of the 3rd Squadron. This is Captain Leo Grant of the long-range recon ship 12, Squadron 2, named the Arrogant Lion. I am sending my electronic pulse emissions band Signature is confirmation. The screen in Leo's panel started to shimmer, and then a face became clear. A girl, correction, a female with the rank insignia of Senior Lieutenant became visible. Hi, back at you, Arrogant Lion. This is Senior Lieutenant Diane Masters. Thanks for welcoming us to the neighborhood. Yoshida tapped him on the shoulders and motioned that they had found the transmission point. Then he motioned for Leo to look at a display screen. The gunship had its missiles locked and loaded, ready to fire at that point. Yeah, well, I hate to be hasty, but Lieutenant, could you unlock your targeting scanners from our transmitter? I would hate to have a new one built because someone's trigger finger got itchy. Lieutenant Masters came back. Captain, I will unlock once I get a full confirmation of your identity. Meanwhile, don't worry. I have the safeties on all the weapons. Besides, my gunners know not to fire on another fleet ship. Terrific, Leo thought. Someone who is as paranoid as I am. Leo caught Packer's urgent motioning and muted the comlink. What's up, hillbilly? Leo said, and as he did, he noticed a mischievous look on Packer's face. Well, Cap, we're up to level 3, and that gunship up there still hasn't noticed us. In fact, all its scanners are concentrating on the far side of the moon, where the transmitter is. Leo caught on immediately. His fighter jock was mischievous. Leo noted, told the guys over the PA circuit what he wanted. Then he went back and unmuted the channel for the gunship. Have you gotten confirmation yet, Lieutenant Masters? Leo asked innocently as a flurry of activity went on around him in the cockpit. Not yet, Captain Grant. You know how it is. You have to enter your squadron clearance code, and then your inter-squadron clearance code, and then the search process, then the matching process, and in addition to that, all our computer is acting a little strange. I think it has something to do with my first mate trying to get Marvin, our computer, to make a decent cup of coffee. I know. I had the same problem when my engineer was reprogramming for beer. By the way, Captain Grant, why did you guys hide yourselves on a cave on the daylight side of this moon? I would think it would limit your sensor sweeps. Leah almost laughed out loud. She was utterly convinced that the line was on the bright side of the moon, in the same cave where Lieutenant Moon had placed the transmitter. Oh, well, you know, we have found ways around those types of problems. Leah raised his hand and placed his finger on the power-up button. Lieutenant Master became very interested and leaned forward in her chair towards the screen. Oh, really? I'd like to hear how you did it. I think burying yourself would be a little counterproductive to surveillance. Leo punched the button, and the ship came ablaze with lights and motion. Well, like for instance, and Leo felt the ship rise off the ground. We didn't bury ourselves. We only make people think we buried ourselves. Leo glanced at his other screens and noted the sharks lifted off about 10 seconds after the lion. And we're now gaining speed and coming into support positions behind and slightly below the lion. Leo put the lieutenant's face on the other screens throughout the ship as well, so the whole crew could watch her expressions. First, there was complete and total shock as lights and sirens started to go off on the other ship's bridge. Then there was anger as the commander realized she had been played for the fool. The lion was behind and within the weapons range of the gunship within 50 seconds of liftoff. It spoke well of the self-control of the other ship's gunners that no blaster fire was sent towards them. Leo suppressed his laughter, but the rest of the line's crew could not, and he heard laughter coming from the cockpit nearby blaster cannon. He was sure engineering and the ball turret had laughter emanating from them as well. The pink tinge to her face was reward enough, but she continued on professionally. Arrogant Lion, your identity has been confirmed. Please stand by for new orders issued from the fleet that we are ordered to give any reconnaissance craft we discovered. Lieutenant Masters out. With this, the transmission ended, and the gunship moved away from the line, which hurriedly went back into orbit around the moon. Leo started laughing as his screen faded. Okay, Leo said after his own and the bridge crew's laughter started to die down. Yoshida, bring us to a parallel orbit to the gunship. Definitely out of weapons range, Leo said laughing. And his first mate nodded. Everyone else stand down. Go back to an 8-hour shift. As soon as the sharks are back on board and the level 4 diagnostics is complete. As for me, I'm going to my cabin and open a channel to the Lieutenant Masters. Apologize and get our new orders. Yoshida, make sure everything gets done, would you? Leo unbuckled himself from his seat, stretched and chuckled, remembering the lieutenant's face, and made his way down the ladder. What a great way to earn a living.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text, due to translation from written word to spoken word. But overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as aaforinger. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.